Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the Silky Smooth Sounds of Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California today. And as always, I am joined by
Bob Bazanko in Niles, Ohio.
The jewel of the Mahoney Valley. Mahoney Valley. Folks, we just want to remind you about the Union Power Sweepstakes. It's back, and you could win up to $40,000, an epic trip to New York City. Just enter today at unionpowerusa.com and boost your chances of winning with some fun bonus activities. And no purchase necessary. Just see the official rules at unionpowerusa.com. Green and Red is a proud member of the Labor Podcast Network with over 200 programs on it. And this project is through that. And we'll also have the details for Union Power America Sweepstakes in our show notes. But on with our show. Today, we are going to be talking about, in some ways, our home states, or Bob's home state for a long time anyway, Texas. And we're going to be talking about the Texas floods. And so, over 4th of July weekend, they had these terrible flash floods in Kerr County, near where the town of Kerrville is, in a area next to the Guadalupe River. It's also known as Flash Flood Alley. 137 as of last count. There's still like a number of people still missing, were killed in those floods, including a camp called Camp Mystic for young girls. And a number of things have come into play with this is that this is also where we're seeing the climate crisis, but we're also seeing the impact of the DOGE cuts because the National Weather Service and the NOAA had been gutted in many ways, and that impacted the ability for people who were in the area to be warned about it. But talking to us today is Candace Byrne, who is a longtime friend and guest of the Green and Red podcast. She is a freelance journalist based in Austin, whose work has appeared in The Nation, The American Prospect, In These Times, Salon, Truth Out on Earth Island Journal. But she is also now the special investigative correspondent for the Texas Observer, covering climate and ecological issues. And so she actually has penned an article on what happened in Kerr County. And so we're going to talk about that. So Candace, welcome back to the Green and Red podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, Scott and Bob. Appreciate it to be here.
Yeah, always happy to have you on the show. Maybe you could actually just talk a little bit, just as a general background, talk a little bit about what took place and some of the causes of the flash flooding was, and then also some of the sort of like extenuating circumstances which caused the loss of life and destruction to be much worse than what it was, than what it should have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think a lot of folks remember Hurricane Harvey when that devastated Houston. I think folks should know going into this that this flooding in the Hill Country was actually deadlier than what took place during Harvey. And one of the reasons why is, like you're saying, all of these basically extenuating circumstances. So this was obviously a climate-fueled flooding situation. But there's a few things about, there's those things about climate change that we know. The warmer air allows the atmosphere to hold more water vapor, more moisture, and it fuels these slow-moving downpours. Same thing that kind of occurred in Houston and Harvey was that slow-moving storm. And so I can tell you, just as somebody living in Austin, which is only a couple hours away from Kerrville, it's just been this kind of slow rain over June and July that we've been getting, this constant rain. But with what happened in Kerr County in particular, I think so there's that climate factor that we have, but then the Hill Country has this added factor where it's the geography itself that sort of lends itself to increased flooding. That's why they call it Flash Flood Alley. And the reason why that is karst. It's karst formation. So that's limestone. And it's this situation where the soils underneath are not impacted in the same way. Like in North Texas, for instance, we have this hard clay soil up there. In karst on the Edwards Plateau, that's the bioregion, it's like a sieve. So this is what I wrote in my article. Like, it basically filters water down. So the hills themselves are filtering the water down, right? But then when you add to that karst limestone, it's porous and it just sends the water through. So you have that factor. You have the geography itself. And then you have this third factor, which is overdevelopment. Basically, the growing population in the hill country, it's grown 9% since 2020. So you add to the karst limestone situation, concrete, more concrete, and that sieve becomes a funnel. So what you had on July 4th was basically all of those factors combined with basically the worst timing that you could possibly have for a disaster scenario like this. So basically, this was early morning hours on July, the morning of July 4th. So this is also a holiday. And this is, I think the fact that this was a federal holiday feeds into why there was such dysfunction, you know, at the federal level, at FEMA. This was just really a terrible timing. But I don't want to blame it all on that. That's a big part of it. But you also just had legitimate failures at every level here, which we can go through. But basically, you referred to the Doge cuts there a bit. And what I'll say for that, you know, NWS, the National Weather Service, they actually did a really good job. Like they actually did their jobs, even despite the cutbacks that they faced, they did about as good as you can do in that scenario, right? This is not on the NWS. So they issued their first flash flood warning at around 1:14 a.m. And they got in touch, like they tried to call local officials. They got voicemails because obviously people are sleeping, but they did get through to some. And there's some back and forth about whether or not those people meaningfully mobilized whatever systems were in place. The biggest problem here is that Kerr County just doesn't have the kind of warning system that it should have had in place. I think people are pretty familiar with that by now. So it's not like these officials are able, even the ones that they NWS could have got through to, it's not like they can mobilize a massive siren system that would have saved the campers. There is no siren system in place. Now, there's another system called the Code Red Alert system that volunteer firefighters were pleading to be activated. And this was somewhere around 5 a.m. And then that apparently did get activated. But there's this whole back and forth about dispatchers said they needed pre-authorization and that was a mess. But that alert system was real spotty. And some people didn't, it's an opt-in thing, so you have to opt into it. But some people didn't get the messages who should have, and then others got them at sporadic times. So I went to Kerr and I got in touch with one particular family that I was able to get connected with. And this is a family who are quite downstream from Kerrville. So they're in Centerpoint, which is it's about 16 miles away. And so really, if anybody should have been warned, it would have been them. And they did have a warning. This family was lucky in a lot of ways. I know that when we talk about the Kerr County floods, one thing is we hear about all the misfortune, right? A lot of people came into town for the 4th of July weekend. This family was lucky in the way that they actually had their family members who normally stay with them had traveled out of town for July 4th. So they were lucky in that way. But being in Centerpoint, there was adequate time for them to have been warned. And the warning that they got was just from relatives. It was from the news themselves. That's the tip, the heads up they had. So basically, the way they recount it is it's 7 a.m. in the morning. They're making coffee. And their house is just on the other side of the road. It's Centerpoint River Road. The Guadalupe is on the other side. And the brother sends a text. And the brother says, "Are you getting water? Are you flooding?" And the father, Kent, he goes outside. He goes over to the berm. He checks the river and it's super high. He's never seen it that high. He says as soon as he opened the door, he heard the roaring of the river. And so the way they talk about it is like they didn't even have on like proper pants or shoes. Like they were just like, "Oh, I think it's time to put on some pants." And for them, it was like, it might be time to get ready. By the time they're getting their shoes and pants on, like water is flooding into their yard. Basically, this couple has just enough time. So to go back a little bit, there's another layer of communication there. The brother texts, he says, "Are you flooding?" Kent checks. He checks the river. He calls him back, right? He calls the brother back. And the brother says, "Hey, I'm seeing reports of people on their roofs in Ingram." And so then the couple is getting ready. And they basically have just enough time for Kent to go and get this ladder out of his shed and set it up to the back. They have this outside opening of an attic. And they make it up there with the dog, like just in time to watch their house completely flood, like 6 feet. And so that was their only warning. They never got a warning any other way. And so they're saying, like, yes, we absolutely would have benefited from a siren system. And it's ridiculous that by this time we knew that there was flooding going on, right? And so that's how they were warned. But they should have had an official warning somewhere. There should have been enough time at that point to let those downstream know. So I feel like their story kind of exemplifies the ways that how all these failures just kept going and kept amassing even as this flood raged downstream, if that makes sense.
And I guess, so with, so, you know, that's an example of what happens. I'm kind of curious, you know, we've also seen like a lot of loss of life. And I'm curious, like those folks, were those folks who, a lot of the folks who died or drowned, obviously there's like what happened at Camp Mystic. But were those folks who just didn't get any kind of warning? They like slept through the alerts, or hadn't opted in, or anything along those lines?
Yeah, I think a lot of the folks that, so it's, the current count is 135 dead and 3 missing. So that's what the current, and so that's statewide. I think that does include some people who are in other counties. But yeah, the big story is obviously the people who were camping. And it's not just Camp Mystic, right? But there are several camps along the Guadalupe. Even just down the road from where this family that I interviewed lived, there is a camp for disabled children, and that's called Camp. And they had actually done a little bit of an evacuation, is my understanding. You know, the thing about Camp Mystic, too, is that they had all, most of their buildings were like right there in the floodplain. And there's been some interesting reporting that's come out since then that FEMA actually allowed them, they appealed to try to get it. Basically, they went through some kind of an appeal process to get their buildings to remain in the flood zone. And FEMA basically granted that. And so FEMA is this whole extra layer on top of all of this that I think the failure doesn't lie with NWS, but more so FEMA. And that's because of the DOGE stuff, right? And what Trump is doing to FEMA, how he's systematically dismantling FEMA. Like, what we know is that FEMA didn't deploy search and rescue until 72 hours. It's, the reporting is also that 2/3 of the phone calls that went to FEMA were unanswered because of the cuts to the contractors who are at the call centers. Christy Noem, DHS secretary, she was, and like, as part of their cost-cutting stuff, she was having to sign off on every FEMA contract that was over $100,000. She would have to personally sign. And so now, as a result of all of this, the guy who is the head, like the urban search and rescue division of FEMA, he's resigned just over all of the fallout of this. One interesting thing I think about the FEMA aspect of this is Trump has changed his rhetoric a little bit on FEMA. Now, it's a subtle kind of maneuvering, but he was really, everything he was saying up until Hill Country floods basically were like, we're going to eliminate, we're going to completely eliminate FEMA after this flood season is over. Come November, it's going to be
over. I mean, he chickened out on something he had been saying.
So now he's saying, oh, we want to reform FEMA. So now the rhetoric has shifted to reform. And so I just saw that there's a bill now that just got introduced, I believe, in the House, that would have FEMA direct it to the president instead of DHS. And the thing about that is Trump uses FEMA very politically. Like and then the headline escapes me at the moment, but there was a recent flood somewhere else that I believe he restricted response to. He uses it politically based on the state. So it's like a liberal state and he restricts FEMA response, but he lets it for Texas because it's red. You know what I mean? He uses it that way. And so I think that's, he's trying to turn it more into this political instrument in that sense. So I think that what the goal is as well, but yeah, really when it comes to the DOGE cuts and the failures here, FEMA is a big part of that.
I think one thing we have seen though in some red states is that the tornadoes have hit and he's not releasing federal emergency funds for that. He's just ignores it. And I think part of it is the media. And so if there's like a lot of media attention and a lot of media scrutiny of where the system's failing because of what they did, then he's like very on top.
Yeah. And I will say with the Hill Country stuff, there has been definitely a flood of coverage as along with the flood itself, which is good because accountability journalism is good and works. But I know that when I was on the ground there, I was really careful to just try to do my best get in anyone's way. So yeah, there was definitely a lot of reporters there. But yeah, so I think it has had that impact that you're talking about, that the accountability focus is shifting that rhetoric a bit.
I haven't followed this as closely as I would have if I were still living in Texas, but I noticed some headlines in Leeds that suggested that there was talk about the risk of flooding and the need for an emergency system. It's been ongoing for quite some time. And there was, I'm not sure if it was from the governor's office, whoever said that they didn't want to use Biden money for, I guess, an alert system. Like I said, I'm just catching snippets of this. What was that about?
Yeah, so that's the state of Texas. Basically, there's been a lot of good reporting from Houston Chronicle that basically this county, Kerr County, had tried to approach the state for money to support such a warning system in the past. And they were never able to really get the kind of grant that they needed from the state. And then the other thing is just the fiscal conservatism in the county itself, both at the state level and at the county level, really hampered their efforts to spend the money. There's transcripts from meetings that kind of show that there was some resistance on the part of, like, residents and local officials to spend that kind of money on such a system. Because fiscal conservative, so Kerr County voted heavily for Trump, and this is in no way trying to blame them or anything for what happened. It's just that it's very fiscally conservative, and so there's a real antithesis towards increasing taxes forever. That's a no-no both on state and county levels. And yeah, I would say that the state legislature probably has the most to blame, right? Because after Harvey, they passed this state flood plan. That's something that I have been following a lot personally because I live in Austin's flood zone. And so I can tell you, I've followed some of the like granular plans that have come out of this larger, it's the Texas Water Development Board. And my neighborhood is like on this, some of these state flood plans for infrastructure. You know, they've targeted some places for like infrastructure mitigation, that kind of thing. So anyways, as a part of this plan, this development board, it has these divisions and it's been coming up with these recommendations, like specific recommendations that the legislature should implement for flood mitigation. And so during this last session, they had 9 specific recommendations that in the form of like legislation that the Texas Ledge could have passed, that like they came up and they just ignored all of it. None of those 9 recommendations were passed. And flooding was not a priority at all. They focused more on like drought. Like they did a lot of stuff around water infrastructure for the ongoing drought. But it's very reactive the way that the state legislature, because of the climate denial, right? All they can do is just react to the climate impacts as they're happening. So after Harvey happened, they were like, oh, we need like a state flood plan. So they put that in order. The Texas Water Development Board, it's been working on new floodplain maps, but they're not finalized. So we're still working off of these old flood maps from like Atlas 14 from FEMA, which are like way outdated. And they don't account for the climate stuff, right? So like I'm in a 100-year flood zone, but I basically look at it like it's probably a 50-year. It's probably half of what it is. That's probably the truth. And yeah, like this family that I spoke with, their house is technically not designated in the floodplain. It goes to show like how those flood maps are all wrong. Like the data that the state is working out of is wrong. They said part of their yard is in the floodplain, but their house like has the proper elevation or whatever to be outside of it. It flooded 6 feet. So yeah, the legislature, it could have passed, you know, these recommendations. It also had a chance to pass like a siren system, like a statewide disaster plan. It had three separate, some of the reporting I've read is like it had 3 separate times over the years that it could have passed funding for siren systems and it just never did. And so again, it just all goes to show that it's just an incredibly reactive situation where, you know, after all of the media and the attention on Harvey fell away and the state fell into drought, it started focusing on that and it started, what do we got to address this drought situation. Remember, we had the fires up in the panhandle, right? So drought became the story. Drought. So that's what happened. So the last legislature, it was all like school vouchers and water funding, some drought funding. But those were basically the priorities. So now they have actually called a special session now just to address like some flood relief stuff. So, but yeah, that's the ledge.
Since maybe Allison, maybe even I, in Houston, where I live, there were 200,000 more acres of concrete. And I know early on and in the article, you mentioned overdevelopment along the Guadalupe. Is that kind of what you're seeing there? They're kind of tearing down more and more trees and green space and...
Yeah. So the overdevelopment issue, I think it's so important to talk about, right? Because I just feel like it's this issue that often gets overlooked. But it's important when we talk about it to talk about it with nuance, right? Because why is overdevelopment happening? Basically because of like population growth. The population is growing everywhere. We have a lot of people that are coming to Texas from more expensive parts of the country. But also just the population here is really growing. Like Kerr County has grown 9% since 2020. And even like myself, like no one is immune to that. That's why I talk about my situation all the time. Like I, a climate reporter who's like pretty knowledgeable about climate change. And as Scott knows, has done climate activism in the state and has helped folks like blockade the Keystone XL pipeline, the southern leg of this Keystone XL pipeline. Like I'm very knowledgeable about the climate crisis and what the fossil fuels are doing to our state and all of these things, and knowingly moved into a house in the floodplain because it was the only affordable house we could get. You know what I mean? Like that. So like it's a complicated issue because the housing affordability crisis also impacts it. Like for us trying to move in and around the Austin area, the floodplain house has its risk, but it was also affordable at the time that we... So that's why I talk about it these ways, is because even this family, they're not trying to pack up and move away. They are from Port Aransas. They're from the coast and they had evacuated at least three times before they got flooded by this. And so they actually, one of the reasons Kent said they moved there was to try to get away from hurricanes on the coast. Then they come here and they get flooded. And so it's just hard to completely avoid the impacts of the climate crisis. Like the actual reality is that no one is really safe. In terms of overdevelopment, like there are things that can happen, right? Like this flood plan, like we're on it. They just need to like pass the money for the infrastructure updates that would like make my neighborhood like more safe, basically. Yeah, I feel like if the legislature prioritized, like if they had actually taken what's coming out of the Texas Water Development Board seriously and passed these recommendations and like just put more emphasis on it. It's just this slow regulatory. Anyway, but yeah, overdevelopment is definitely exacerbating all of these problems, right? Like when you add concrete, when you pave over all these green spaces, it's just less and less place for saturation to steep, as you all both know. And yeah, I feel like the other main issue with like floodplain mapping and overdevelopment is basically empowering counties to be able to regulate floodplains. One of the reasons we were just able, right now we could probably build like a shed or something in our backyard if we wanted to, and it wouldn't be very well regulated here. Like empowering counties to be able to regulate floodplain building in a way that, like, okay, one of the recommendations that the legislature could have taken up in the last session, for instance, was allowing counties to be able to pass drainage fees that would fund like flood mitigation projects. Right. That's not even something counties can do here. So this is the idea that like on your utility bill, like you would pay a drainage fee and that would fund flood infrastructure and mitigation projects. And I will tell you, I will happily pay a drainage fee. I'd love to pay a drainage fee. Please charge me for a drainage fee. I will pay it. So yeah, that kind of thing. Basically, it's zoning. It's like when, and I believe Camp Mystic is outside of official city limits. And so when it's zoned in counties, they have very little like regulatory authority, which is why so many companies like place ever their projects in counties. Like I know like the Tesla lithium refinery, he's placing that outside of city limits. There's just so many like projects like that I can point to that they are strategically placed outside of city limit, escape regulatory burden. So anyway. Yeah,
but then abundance wouldn't work.
Right.
That's the whole argument. It's one of the main arguments of the book. But we don't have to go on a tangent about that. But I just finished the book. So.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read it. That's interesting to know. Wait, so what is the argument that it should be placed in?
There's too much regulation. There's too much process in building houses or zone or what. It's a bit of a neoliberal austere from a liberal Democrat perspective.
Yeah, no, yeah. I've seen all the criticism of it and I'm just kind of, okay, that seems like neoliberalism repackaged, but
we're going to have a show on it at some point.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I would say with the floodplain stuff too, like I'd like to see the counties have more of an ability to effectuate policies that could be workable. I think the other thing though too is just like, if people just need, we need the floodplain mapping data, not necessarily to kick everybody out of the floodplains, but we need it to like adequately warn people, right? I feel like there is a certain level of, okay, I am knowingly accepting this flood risk by buying this house, and that's my choice to accept that risk. I feel like the danger with the flooding, and this is how this family that I talked to feels too, right? It's about getting adequately warned so that you can leave. And then if you flood, you have to deal with that. And that's or the risk you took by moving where you did, right? You need the floodplain mapping to be informed of the risk you're taking. But you also need the floodplain mapping to create warning systems that let people have a chance to get out of harm's way. And so that's how this family feels too. You know, it's not like they're going to move now. They have to go through this whole process of cleaning up this house, getting rid of. That's when I came out here. That's what they're doing. There's people from around the area on their house. Like they're getting meals delivered. So the mutual aid stuff was a really, really powerful to see.
That was my next question is around, assuming that we're currently seeing less grants for relief from FEMA or definitely the state of Texas. I'm wondering what the level of the community mutual aid was. You write about that some in the article.
Yeah, it was. It is really powerful. That's one of those things that really always stands out in disasters, right? Yeah, I think it's Rebecca Solnit who wrote about it in Paradise Built in Hell, who talks about like how people kind of, rather than the sort of animalistic like side of human nature that conservatives or the far right kind of argues is the dominant force. Actually, what you see in disasters is that like people come together and they come together really hard. And that's what I saw over and over again in the Hill Country. So basically there's volunteers from the area that are at this house, like helping them. It's a wild scenario because there's so much going on. There's people who are like helping them like bring in a dumpster and take all of the things and all of the appliances to the dumpster. But there's also like people who are coordinating, don't pay for. There's one volunteer from the area who is like, don't pay for anything. Like, we know this electrician and we know this person over here and we know this person who can all offer you like these services. Like she was coordinating like logistics for this family and like what they had to do. So that's, and then there's like trucks that are coming through and like delivering hot meals in to-go boxes directly to the site. And so this family doesn't have to leave. Like they're just getting everything delivered. It's not like they have to go to the mutual aid sites and like pick stuff up. There's just like deliveries of resources that are happening. And so I went to the Salvation Army office and there's like hundreds of people there organizing just all piles of different kinds of essential goods and making them into kits and then sending them out for these deliveries. So I saw how that process was working inside. And then all the churches had transformed into the same kind of like mutual aid sites. And search and rescue groups were like operating out of like local churches. And basically it was like the entire town transformed into like a mutual aid center. It wasn't just like this site or that site, like really the whole city of Kerrville basically look like a mutual aid situation.
And we also saw, and you also saw search and rescue come in from Mexico, and we saw search and rescue come in from California as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. Just where I pulled up, there was like hundreds of people combing the banks. And so I pulled up on Tuesday. So this 4 days after the flood. Yeah. Yeah. And there's like hundreds of people combing the banks everywhere. Yeah, it was really a sight to be. And so you could see like the rescue boats, like up and down the river, up and down. And everyone like went and was taking pictures of the mangled trees. And you could see gas canisters stationed like maybe, I don't know, every mile or so, like along the river route, just there for the boats like that are just going, and helicopters are flying overhead. And yeah, it's this massive endeavor.
I've seen all kinds of natural disasters in Texas and nothing gets done. And this also reminded me of things like Uvalde and Sutherland, gun violence, nothing gets done. kind of, it's almost like a script. Greg Abbott comes out and says, the blame game is for losers, and he compares it to football. Is there any reason to think things are going to be different this time, that they'll actually act and maybe put in a warning system or maybe do something about floodplain maps or anything?
So, yeah, he had the same kind of rhetoric about certain press conferences where he, what did he say? He said some reporter pressed him about the warnings, and he said his rhetoric or his response was something like, that term is for losers, or like something like that. And it was just like, okay. But yeah, he's very much still doing that. I think the level of this, the level of the media, there's been so much national media about this as well, that they have called this special session now. And basically the special session is almost solely about flood relief. I think there's some other things that there's some stuff around the THC bill that they passed that I think they're reassessing, but it's almost all flood relief. And I feel like it's just pressure from the massive media coverage and everything that has come out. And it's the death toll. I think for this, things are really heightened by just the visceral sorrow of those little girls getting swept away at Camp Mystic. Like, it's a heartbreaking story. Like, it is a heartbreaking story that has really captured the nation's attentions. And so I think that is like the pressure that is sort of like fueling this. It's a very tragic like situation. And the death toll is, like I said, higher than even Harvey was. And yeah, they called a special session and it's still ongoing. Dan Patrick and Ann Abbott have both said, we're going to do something about warnings. Like, we're going to do something about a warning system in the special session. And I think that they are going to do that. That has been the central focus of everything that's coming out. Even just this family that I spoke to in Centerpoint, who are quite downstream, world, nothing was the brother. We got one from the brother. And so, yeah, I think bare bones, definitely like some kind of warning system. I think it's a question of whether or not they'll pass funding to do like a statewide disaster response plan that incorporates like siren warning system. I mean, it might be more limited, but they had a chance to do that last session and they didn't. So maybe they do just pass that, but we'll have to see as the session continues.
I do want to throw out there's like a justice element to this too, is that like the Camp Mystic, I think that's a tragedy, is like those girls came from affluent families. Like, one of the girls who died was actually a relative of the Hunt oil family. And and I know that there's a lot of people with second homes and retirement homes in Kirk County who are like very well off. They live next to the golf course or what have you. And I like you said earlier that like climate change is going to affect a lot of people. But if this had happened in some East Houston or something like that, or South Dallas, that, you know, it wouldn't be the tragedy that it's been in the national media or with the Republican Party, whether nationally or state or the Democrats, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100% on point, because we saw the state funding flood plan pass after Harvey, but I don't think it was necessarily treated the same way. And I think you're 100% on point there, that it is totally that difference. And the Hill Country is like notoriously known for being wealthier.
A lot of retirement homes and second homes of people from Austin and Dallas and Houston.
Yeah, so it's in Austin, it started to become called the Silicon Hills, because all of the tech from California is moving in. They're not in and around, like, obviously tech's in Austin, right? But the really wealthy tech financiers are moving into the hills outside Austin. And so they're starting to become called the Silicon Hills for that reason.
Is that where Elon has set up, Kim?
I'm sure he probably has a property, but I know that he has also property down there in South Texas near State.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure where his Austin.
Well, the plant is in Corpus, isn't it? Isn't his plant going to be in Corpus?
Oh, the lithium refinery? Yeah.
But Tesla HQ is in Austin, right?
Yeah, Gigafactory is in Austin. So he probably does have a property around here, but I don't know where it is. Maybe I should know about that, but I don't happen to know where it is.
Is there much agriculture in that area, Central Texas there, like farms or big farms or anything?
That is a good question. I think that it has probably a history of agriculture, but I honestly think that Kirk County makes a lot of its money off of Guadalupe tourism. Like, yeah. I think that is really like a lot of the tax base is from all these businesses along the riverbanks that are cashing in on the pristine and the all of that kind of thing. I think that's really the main thing about it.
Years ago, I rode a motorcycle. I just kind of went around the area. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. There's the big cypress tree and Yeah, like we've gone down there to just hang out. Where was that little town we went to? There's a little tourist trap town. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, but the hill country has all these nice little wineries that you can go on, that kind of thing. And it is nice to go and visit. Yeah.
I do want to say, I think it was Abbott who actually also said when this was going on 3 weeks ago, is that it's because Republicans get so much criticism for thoughts and prayers when, you know, these tragedies happen, is that I believe it was Abbott who said, actually, the praying worked because God actually took the floods down. The floodwaters receded after we all prayed so hard.
Wow.
And I think that was Abbott. I'm pretty sure
it was Abbott.
It was Abbott. Yeah.
My God.
God made sure it wasn't worse.
Yeah.
Okay. That is wild. I miss that. Like I said, I too am having a hard time just keeping up with the amount of coverage and different things that are coming out about it. But yeah, I didn't see that. That's wild.
I mean, I guess this is the kind of thing, like if you've lived in Texas, like all of us have, it's not shocking when this happened. And that's why, to be cynical, there was a massive outpouring after Uvalde. And I realize guns are different, but still, it's just amazing how they can ignore these kinds of calamities and just move forward. So yeah. Hopefully this is different, but I've been through, I don't know how many of these things at Houston, and nothing ever got better. There was just more concrete.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see with the special session, but I think you're absolutely on point that the fact that they called all the lawmakers back, Texas lawmakers, hate doing their jobs. That's why the legislature only convenes like biannually. It's every other year. Yeah. They hate being there. Anyway, they called everybody back for this. And it's that factor that you're saying about this impacted the wealthy white Christian folks that are basically our base. So
using this special session for redistricting too.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that's another thing.
I'm sure they'll put that in the same bill as the front, the Democrats can't vote against it.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah, tie it all together. That's a long-held strategy.
You know, you have the redistricting and the front flood relief. Does the Republicans have a supermajority in the Texas legislature right now, or is it just a majority?
I don't know if it's a supermajority. I know that they were wrangling over the House Speaker, and he was the whole debate over during that time was whether or not they would even allow Democrats to have chair positions on committees, which was pretty wild. And yeah, but I'm not actually sure if it's a supermajority or not. I don't think it is, because I feel like that would ring out in my head, but I'm just unclear on that.
I think I'm good with questions. Do you have anything else, Bo? One other question is, like, where can we, just to follow your work, since you've shifted over, you were at Truth Out before, and every time I interviewed you before, you were the editor and senior reporter at Truth Out, and now you're at the Texas Observer. Just for future work by Candace Byrne, we can just check out the Texas Observer website from time to time.
Yeah. And I'm on Blue Sky. I've also migrated from Twitter fully to Blue Sky. And so that's primarily where I am. It's just my name at Blue Sky, just whatever the .bsky.social. So that's primarily where I am. And yeah, I'll be writing at the Texas Observer going forward. And yeah.
Okay.
Good to be there.
Thanks. Thanks folks, for everything. And just thanks for everything and good luck.
Yeah.
Really appreciate you coming on. Folks, we've been talking with Candace Byrne, who's a special correspondent for the Texas Observer, talking about the Texas floods. If you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. I got to start saying that more. If you're watching this on YouTube, please give us a subscribe. If you're listening to this on any of the audio platforms, give us a rate and review. And if you really like us, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit that support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And we'll talk to you again soon. And everybody, make trouble, misbehave, and thoughts and prayers and all that too. So.